The Air Force has a list of priorities for fiscal 2015. They include eliminating 21 general officer billets, addressing the problems with an aging fleet of aircraft, and dealing with budgets designed to shrink the force. Still, Secretary Deborah Lee James says the service is in excellent shape. As today marks the 67th birthday of the Air Force, James gives us a status report.
I've been on the job for about 8.5 months and been out and around, and I've visited some 45 bases in 23 states and a number of foreign countries. And our Air Force is in good shape, though we are feeling some strains due to the uncertainty of budgets, the uncertainty of the world conditions. We've been a very, very busy Air Force in the last several years. And our airmen would like some additional certainty, particularly as it comes to downsizing and when will the downsizing be over.
Yes, and I guess the other uncertainty has come up in very recent weeks, and that is this whole ISIL ISIS campaign that is somewhat underway. And right now there's been hearings in the previous week and so forth on what the U.S. strategy is. But the bulk of the work by the U.S. seems to fall on the Air Force, correct?
Well, you're correct on that, Tom. So whenever any operation, whenever the Air Force is called upon to conduct any operation around the world, we have a saying, we have to be ready to fight tonight, meaning within hours, not days and not weeks. And, of course, that is a hallmark of our Air Force. As you point out, this latest fight against this barbaric group that calls themselves ISIL, who has nothing to offer but death and destruction and evil, it's something that the president has said that we will, over time, we will degrade them and ultimately destroy them. And so, so far, you're right. Air Force, along with our joint partners, we are in the lead. And so far, about 80% of the airstrikes that have been conducted have been by the United States Air Force.
And so they are launching from central command locations. In other words, they're not coming over from the United States like with the big bombers that can do that. So you're operating forward in a projected type of manner?
The wonderful thing about our Air Force aircraft is they can come from any location in the world in quite a rapid way. And due to our refueling capabilities, they can be refueled in midair. So where they originate from is not so much the issue. It's the fact that we can project power, we can do it quickly, and we can do it decisively.
And is the Air Force in a good position now with some of the cutbacks to sustain this over the long term? Because those flights do take their toll on the need for maintainers to do their job.
So what we always do in the United States Air Force is we always put our readiest forces forth first. So in other words, the forces that are in action are those which are most ready. Over time, we will need to look at the resources for this operation. We will, of course, traditionally, we have either received supplemental funding. We've had what's called the overseas contingency operation funding that we've had for the last dozen or so years in Afghanistan and Iraq, which has supplied the resources necessary for the types of operations we do overseas. So if this is sustained for the long run, and the president said certainly we have to be prepared for that, then we would be looking for additional resources to make sure that we can do it properly.
Now, that OCO looks like it's going to be continued at more or less its current levels for the 2015 fiscal year. And then beyond that, I guess, is anyone's guess, in 2016 is when sequestration in theory occurs. So if you had the OCO to conduct the operations but also had the sequester for everything else, how would that affect the Air Force, and what are your plans for coping with it?
Sequestration is a bad deal for the U.S. Air Force. It's a bad deal for the U.S. military, and I would assert it's a bad deal for the entirety of our government operations. So we, at all opportunities, talk to the Congress about the need to lift sequestration, and I think world events are just the most recent example of why lifting that sequestration is an imperative that we have to get on with. Back to the Congress's authority, of course, it is their constitutional prerogative always to rearrange the funding requests that we in the DOD put forth. But another message that we keep driving home, that if Congress does rearrange our funding priority, we implore them and we stress in the strongest possible terms, do not take it out of our readiness accounts. Do not pay for other priorities out of readiness, because readiness is extremely important, as we are seeing day to day now in the fight against ISIL.
And looking longer term, the Air Force is generally looking at a future relying on three basic platforms. I'm oversimplifying, but that's the F-35, the new KC-46 tanker, and some as yet still fairly sketchy next generation long range bomber. So one is being delivered fitfully, but it's getting there. One is not quite to the testing stage operationally, and one is on the drawing boards. So it seems like that would be something that, to have that type of future, you really have to keep some level of funding outside of readiness for these developments.
That's correct. So those three programs, the Joint Strike Fighter, the KC-46, which is our new tanker, and the Long Range Strike Bomber, those are three very, very important programs for our future. But there are other programs as well. We have a variety of space programs. Space is a domain in which we operate. It's more what we call contested and congested, meaning there are many more countries now that are utilizing space, and perhaps not all of them are utilizing or prepared to utilize space for peaceful purposes. So we have to do more in space. I predict we'll do more in intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance, otherwise known as ISR. And you mentioned the bomber. That is, of course, one of the legs of our nuclear triad. The other is our ICBMs, our intercontinental ballistic missiles, and we'll also be investing more heavily in that force in the future. So there's a number of important programs, and you're right, we have to keep our eye on the future as well as maintain our readiness for today.
We're speaking with Air Force Secretary Deborah Lee James, and on that nuclear missile piece of the triad, you've had a lot of contingencies to deal with there, with the cheating scandal, and you had some commanding officer issues. Is that all pretty much on the mend at this point, given the steps you've taken?
I think we're trending in the right direction. The nuclear mission for us in the Air Force is number one, and so what that means is we have to give it our top attention when it comes to people issues, and funding issues, modernization issues, and I'll say cultural issues. So we've put a lot of changes in place over the last 6 to 8 months. We've redirected manning. We've redirected funding. We've issued new directives to our personnel to try to begin to change what has been a culture of always preparing to take the next test or preparing to submit to the next inspection. Instead of that, to have a culture of continuous improvement where there is the ability to make a mistake in a training environment but learn from it and move on. So all of these things are areas that we're working on, and the initial feedback that I am receiving from our troops on the ground in the missile community is that we're trending in the right direction. They're beginning to see some of these changes put in place, and there's what I would call cautious optimism out there about the way ahead.
But it seems like that new course of action and that the lessons learned there could really apply to even well-performing programs.
Absolutely. And much of what we are doing in the missile community comes from what we call the Force Improvement Program. And that is a bottoms-up review of some of our processes, our procedures, some of our funding priorities. It's a little bit like power to the people. We went to the people. It needs to be done here. How do you think you can do your job in a better way? And through that, we received many ideas, and we, in fact, are implementing quite a few of those ideas.
And turning to the F-35 for just a moment, earlier this week, Lieutenant General Bogdan gave a pretty thorough progress report on that plane, and he talked about fixing the engine that had a fire and fixing the airframe issues and getting the software on track and getting generally the thing tightened up so that the deliveries can take place in some orderly fashion down the line. But when all that is said and done, is the resulting plane really the plane that the Air Force feels it can depend on for the next 20, 30, 40 years?
We believe that the answer to that is yes. The Joint Strike Fighter is the future of our air superiority capability, the future of our fighter force. The capabilities of the Joint Strike Fighter are so-called fifth-generation capabilities, which means that the capabilities of this fighter will be able to fuse information from a variety of sources in a way which is unlike anything of the fighters of today. It'll make it more lethal. It'll make it more survivable against high-end threats. The feedback that I get from the pilots who have been working with the Joint Strike Fighter as it is being tested in development and an operational test is that it is a cut way, way above of anything that they have ever operated before. So I think once we push through all of the developmental problems and we really start to get to the point of initial operating capability, the Joint Strike Fighter is exactly where we need to be. But like in any development program, we need to push it over the finish line, and we need to keep the costs trending as they are now in the right direction, which is down, reduce the cost to the taxpayer of this program. Every day is different, and every day is exciting. Some days I'm in Washington where there are meetings and there are decisions to be made on policy matters and budgetary matters and working with the Congress. Other times I am out and about and I'm seeing our Air Force in action, and that's really the favorite part of my job when I get to meet face-to-face with our airmen and women around the world. And if there is one thing above all other things that gives me great optimism about the future of our Air Force, it is the innovation, it's the hard work, it's the dedication and motivation of the airmen that I meet. So they give me energy, which is why I love to be on the road again.
And you're not a newcomer to the federal scene, certainly, but I imagine the federal budget process, and especially in an organization as complicated as the Air Force, which itself is part of an even more complicated enterprise of DOD, has that been tough to try to get your handle so that you know what you don't know as well as trying to find out what you do need to know?
So the federal budget process is complex. It's certainly not impossible to master. It's complex. And I think first and foremost, it's complex because you're doing three or four things all at roughly the same time. So right now, as we speak, we are, of course, executing on the FY14 budget. We are awaiting the decisions that are not yet made by Congress, the final decisions on the FY15 budget, which begins on the 1st of October. We believe we're going to have a continuing resolution for some period of time, so we have to get the plan in place on exactly how to execute that. Meanwhile, we are building the FY16 budget as we speak, trying to make decisions about that. And with, of course, every budget, there is a five-year plan that lays out how we see our programs going over the next 5 years. So everything I just mentioned is going on right now all at once. So this is the complexity of it. But again, it's not something that's impossible to master. We just have to keep persistent focus and persistent leadership on getting the details correct.
And if you could project what the Air Force would look like in your vision, say 5 years down the line, although nobody ends up serving that long, but what you do now will certainly influence that. How would you describe the Air Force as you envision it 5 years down the line?
I believe that our Air Force will be a smaller Air Force than it is today. Matter of fact, right now we're already the smallest Air Force we've been in our 67 years of history. So we are already smaller. 5 years from now, we will be more reliant on our National Guard and Reserve forces as part of our total force, which I think is a very positive development. We will continue the focus on readiness. So 5 years from now, I hope to see us be more ready than we are today. Of course, our readiness has suffered some in past years, and we're bound and determined that we are gradually going to get those readiness levels up. And 5 years from now, we will be a more modern Air Force, because although we won't have completed the mission of modernization, we'll be closer down the line toward having some of the new programs. The Joint Strike Fighter will be farther along, as will the KC-46 tanker. And although the long-range strike bomber probably won't be in a delivery status yet, it will be farther down the developmental road. Same with space and same with nuclear and cyber. We will have advanced the ball on all of these to be a more modern Air Force. And that's key because we need to keep our technological edge at all times.
And a final question would be regarding that technological edge, is the defense industrial base. They suffer along with the vicissitudes of budgets for DOD itself. Are you confident that the combination of the armed services, including the Air Force, can keep a DIB that is up to the task of what you need as all this transformation takes place over the next few years?
So I am confident that we are having a better dialogue with industry than perhaps we have had in recent years. General Welsh and I have set up several new industry groups that we're working with the help of the Air Force Association and the National Defense Industrial Association. And so we are having an active dialogue. So when problems occur, either we, the government, or they, the industry partners, can bring those problems to the table, and we're prepared to address them together as a team, because industry is a very key part of our team and will remain so going forward.